Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Monday, January 31st, 2022. Coming up this hour,
traders weigh the chance of a half percentage point rate hike in March.
The labor market comes into focus with this week's key jobs report.
Oil is on track for its best January in three decades.
And Joe Rogan apologizes after billions of dollars get wiped from Spotify's market value.
New York City will home deliver free COVID antiviral pills, plus North Korea confirms a test fired a mid-range ballistic missile over the weekend. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. It'll be the Bengals and Rams playing Super Bowl 56 in L.A. A win for the Rangers. The Islanders lost.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and U.S. futures are mixed to start the week. We're coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up less than a tenth of a percent, up 3 points now. Dow futures down 50, and NASDAQ futures up 87. The 10-year Treasury down 2/32. Yield 1.77%. The yield on the two-year, 1.19%. Nathan.
Karen, we begin with the Fed this morning in speculation about whether a rate hike in March could be bigger than initially expected. Let's get the latest live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Nathan. The Fed could raise the benchmark rate by 50 basis points if there's a need to be more aggressive on inflation. That's what Atlanta Fed President Rafael Bostic told the Financial Times, adding that all options are on the table for every Fed meeting this year if needed. But he stuck to his prediction that 3/4 point increases starting in March is the most likely scenario this year. Meantime, Goldman Sachs predicts the Fed will raise interest rates by 25 basis points 5 times this year. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Renita. As we spend the next 6 weeks reading tea leaves from the Fed, we'll get a concrete look at the labor market this Friday. The Fed and investors will be paying close attention to the January jobs report. We get a preview from Bloomberg's Vinnie Dalgiudice.
The data could provide insight on the highly contagious Omicron variant's impact on the economy. Economists are forecasting a tepid December increase, 175,000 or so, after November's weaker-than-forecast showing. Jobless claims jumped last month as COVID-19 forced businesses to close temporarily or throw in the towel after 2 years of pandemic turbulence. Vinny Dalgiudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Okay, Vinny, thanks. Now, in Asia overnight, we got a tepid reading on the world's second largest economy. China's manufacturing sector expanded at a slower pace in January. Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis has the details.
The official PMI declined to 50.1. That was just above the estimate of 50. The non-manufacturing gauge fell to 51.1, also just above the forecast. A number of issues here, a seasonal slowdown, COVID-19 outbreaks, and a weakening housing market. Also, the government ordered steel plants to cut output. That's to reduce air pollution ahead of the Winter Olympics. In the meantime, the Caixin PMI dropped to 49.1, and that was the worst in almost 2 years. Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Brian, thank you. In Europe, central banks and economic data are also in focus this week. We get a key rate decision by the Bank of England on Thursday. We go live to London and get the latest with Bloomberg's Ewan Potts. Ewan, good morning.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. The UK could be heading for its first back-to-back rate hike in 17 years. Economists in Bloomberg's survey reckon the Bank of England will raise its key interest rate to 0.5% this week. Forecasters also expect the central bank to stop reinvesting in bonds that have matured. This comes as the Bank of England battles surging inflation, now at 5.4%, the highest in 30 years. In London, I'm Ewan Potts, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ewan, thanks. Politics are also center stage in Europe after 6 days of voting in Italy's parliament. Sergio Mattarella has been re-elected president. We get the details from Bloomberg's Francine Lacqua in Rome.
After almost a week of failed votes to elect an alternative candidate, Sergio Mattarella was re-elected as Italy's president. Mario Draghi, the prime minister, was initially seen as a top contender for the job, and he made it clear he would be keen to become head of state. But lawmakers then feared a return to political turmoil without Draghi as prime minister. In the end, it was Draghi himself who asked Mattarella to remain in office, breaking the week-long stalemate. In Rome, Francine Lacqua, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Francine, thank you. Geopolitical tension in Eastern Europe also on the agenda this week. The United Nations Security Council meets today regarding concerns about Russia invading Ukraine. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
The Pentagon says Russia continues to build up troops on a day-to-day basis. U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Linda Thomas-Greenfield says today is actually a chance for Russia.
Part of the reason we're calling for this meeting on Monday is one more opportunity to find a diplomatic way out for the Russians.
But she says the others are to talk further actions from sanctions to troop buildup and to see where other nations stand. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ed, thanks. Now, tension over Ukraine, along with sustained global demand, are giving a lift to oil. Crude is on course for its best January in three decades. In fact, oil's been higher for six straight weeks. Checking prices now, West Texas Intermediate crude's up 0.5% or 48 cents at $87.28 a barrel. Brent is higher by 0.8% at $90.74.
Well, on the corporate front this morning, Nathan, Spotify is in the spotlight. It's responding to controversy over COVID misinformation from Joe Rogan's podcast. We get the story from Bloomberg's Lisa Mateo.
In an Instagram video, Rogan apologized and pledged more balance and better research for his podcasts. The comments come after Spotify outlined steps it will take to halt the spread of misleading information about COVID. Rogan has hosted several outspoken skeptics of the vaccine. Last week, singers Neil Young and Joni Mitchell pulled their music from Spotify to protest Rogan. Almost $4 billion was wiped from Spotify's market value last week. Lisa Mateo, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Lisa, thanks. Spotify wasn't the only stock to take a pounding last week. So did Robinhood. It dropped to a record low following earnings. On Friday, Kathy Woods, ARK Investment Management, bought nearly 2.5 million shares. Robinhood still trades 67% below its initial public offering price.
And Nathan, there's also a possible deal this morning. Bloomberg News has learned that Elliott Investment Management and Vista Equity are nearing an agreement to buy software maker Citrix Systems. The deal would value the company's equity at about $13 billion. Citrix makes software that workers use to log on to corporate programs virtually. And this is Bloomberg.
Karen, it's 5:07 on Wall Street. We're at 21 degrees in Central Park. Heads up for an early accident on the Bell Parkway near Erskine Street. We'll have details in traffic shortly. First, Michael Barr is back to tell us what else is going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. New York City will provide free antiviral pills home delivered to people who test positive and are higher risk from COVID-19. Mayor Eric Adams had a news conference yesterday in the Bronx, says we want to make sure that no one with COVID has to move throughout the city.
New York is one of the only places in the nation where we are doing this free delivery.
Adams also shared the latest data on COVID rates in the city.
Hospitalizations are down, COVID deaths are down. And that is because of the hard work of everyday New Yorkers that are doing the right thing around vaccinations and booster shots.
Mayor Adams says the pills will be delivered in partnership with Alto Pharmacy. North Korea has confirmed it test launched an intermediate range ballistic missile capable of reaching the U.S. territory of Guam in its most significant launch in almost 5 years. North Korea said the test verified the accuracy of the Hwasong-12 missile. White House officials said North Korea's escalating provocations have become increasingly concerning. Chesley Christ, the 2019 winner of the Miss USA pageant and a correspondent for the entertainment news program Extra, has died. New York City police said Christ, who was 30, jumped from a Manhattan apartment building. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York says he is pledging to push for $1.5 billion of the federal budget to go to the ATF to combat the interstate gun trade.
I'm going to ask them to direct that money to particularly go after gun trafficking, the iron pipeline, and a special task force that they have set up to deal with states that export guns.
Senator Schumer says the gun trade is responsible for 95% of the gun violence in New York. New York Republicans Nicole Malliotakis and Claudia Tenney would have to find a way to appeal to opposition party voters under a remapped congressional district plan. The proposed map, released Sunday, is designed to maximize the prospects for Democrats ahead of the November election. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts from more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. Almost 5:10 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. The Super Bowl is set. John Stanshauer.
It is, Nathan. Bengals, Rams, Super Bowl 56 in L.A. And if the game is anything like what we've seen the last 2 weekends, we'll have a close Super Bowl. Last 6 playoff games, 5 decided by 3 points and the other by 6 in overtime. 2 comebacks and another overtime in the conference championship. Cincinnati came from 18 down to win in Kansas City, 27-24 in OT. The Bengals led by their young quarterback, Joe Burrow, and their rookie kicker, Evan McPherson, who kicked 4 field goals in all 3 of their playoff wins. He's gone 12 for 12. The one in OT was set up by an interception thrown by Patrick Mahomes, who came back to earth after last week's heroics. He had a strong start yesterday, but Mahomes and the Chiefs denied a third straight AFC championship. The Rams, led by Matthew Stafford, rallied from 10 down in the fourth quarter. Second touchdown of the game for Cooper Kupp, and then a couple of field goals. They took the lead on the 49ers with under 2 minutes left, and then were able to seal the victory.
Back to Garoppolo. Pocket crumbling. He spins out. He's hit. He's wrapped up. He flipped it forward. It's tipped. It's intercepted. It's intercepted. It's intercepted. Aaron Donald got pressure on Garoppolo, and Craven Howard clinches the NFC Championship game.
Hey, LA had the call. Rams finally beat the 49ers, who they lost to 6 straight times, 20-17. Josh McDaniels, the longtime offensive coordinator in New England, leaving to be the head coach of the Raiders. Giants will have a presser today for new coach Brian Daboll. Rangers at the Garden avoided their first 3-game losing streak, scored final minute, beat Seattle 3-2. The Islanders lost to Minnesota 4-3. John Stashauer, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
All right, John. Thanks. Futures mix as we get ready to close out this volatile month of January. Right now, S&P futures little change to lower. Dow futures down 75 points. NASDAQ futures are higher, up 62. Dennis Gartman, former publisher of the Gartman Letter, joins us on these markets next. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 1130 weather, mostly sunny today with a high near 30, mid-30s tomorrow. Clouds by Wednesday, but milder with a high near 45 degrees. Right now it's clear and 21 in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks are rising this morning. U.S. stock index futures are mixed and a gauge of global equities are pairing its biggest monthly drop since March 2020. As investors bet corporate earnings will continue to grow amid aggressive tightening by the Fed. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are little change. Dow futures down 48. NASDAQ futures up 70. The DAX in Germany is up 1.1%. 10-year Treasury down 4/32, yield 1.78%. The yield on the 2-year, 1.20%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.6% or 55 cents at $87.37 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.2% or $3.40 at $17.90 an ounce. The euro 1.1179 against the dollar. British pound 1.3446. And the yen is at 115.46. And the euro area economy grew modestly in the fourth quarter amid another wave of surging coronavirus infections and curbs on activity. Gross domestic product rose 0.3%, slightly less than predicted. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. The UN Security Council is scheduled to meet today for the first time on Russia's troop buildup and threatening actions against Ukraine at the request of the United States. U.S. Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield said Russia's actions pose a clear threat to international peace and security and the UN Charter. Russia's deputy ambassador called the proposed meeting a PR stunt. It will be the Bengals versus the Rams in the Super Bowl on February 13th. Cincinnati beat the Chiefs 27-24 in overtime to win the AFC. The Rams beat the 49ers 20-17 for the NFC title. In the NHL, the Rangers won. The Islanders and Bruins lost. In tennis, Rafael Nadal has won a men's record 21st Grand Slam singles title in the Australian Open final. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts from more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael. Thank you. It's 5:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak as we get set to close out a volatile month of January. Let's bring in Dennis Gartman, chairman of the University of Akron Endowment Investment Committee and former publisher of the Gartman Letter, as we get set for a new trading week. Dennis, good morning. Very interesting to see all the gyrations over the last month. And just this last week, we had the S&P and the NASDAQ pretty much end where they started. Are you looking for more volatility as we continue to price in what exactly the Fed is going to do?
I'm afraid we're going to see a great good deal more volatility. I think we're due for a little bounce here, nothing more than that. I like to look at the charts from a distance, and I always talk about markets that, after they've broken, move back into what I call the box, the 50 to 62% retracement of what they had traversed during the decline. And I think that takes the Dow somewhere between 35,500 and 34,750. That'll be the box for the Dow. The S&P, I think, can get back to about 45,500 to 4,500. And I think the NASDAQ can get back to about 15,500 and 15,175. We'll probably do that this week. Remember, at the first of every month, we always get an inflow of money from retirement funds. That'll give us a little bit of a bounce tomorrow, maybe even into Wednesday. But watch the volume. The volume on for months now has been stronger on the downside, weaker on the upside, and I suspect that that's going to continue. So we'll probably see a nice little rally between today, tomorrow, maybe even into Wednesday. But I doubt it'll be on very strong volume, and I think it'll be something that should be sold into. I think the bear market began 11 weeks ago, and I think we can, for the next year or two, well, I shouldn't say that long. Let's just say it'll continue to break until it stops. For the next several months, one is to sell into strength, not to buy weakness. And as I've said, weeks now, in a bear market, he or she who loses the least will do the best.
Yeah, I think it is safe to say that you've been pretty bearish on this market for quite a while now. Is that driven by a more hawkish Fed? Is that what's driving that view?
I think that's the predominant circumstance. What had driven the bull market was a very expansionary Fed, and the Fed, I think, has made it abundantly clear that they're going to take the fuel away, take the gasoline away, take the kerosene, take the propane away from the markets that had driven the markets higher. And the fact that we're taking the fuel away from the market, and that's probably going to be abundantly clear by the middle of March when the Fed has said they're going to be done with QE, and probably begin the process of quantitative tightening as they allow their balance sheet to roll off quietly. They won't be a seller of anything. They'll just simply allow securities that they've bought from the Fed or bought from the Treasury to roll off quietly over time. But that's a reduction in the amount of fuel that has driven the market higher, and I think that that's what's driving the bear market and will continue to do so for probably at least to the end of this year. And I think we're going to see demonstrably weaker prices over that period of time. When you take the fuel away that has driven things higher, it's going to be very difficult to keep things going up.
Of course, the debate is how much fuel is going to be taken away, whether we're going to see more aggressive rate hikes early, just how many rate hikes we're going to see this year. What's your case on how many hikes we could see from the Fed?
2.5 months ago, when I said the Fed will probably at least tighten four times, that seemed to be laughable. Now everybody is talking about the fact there'll be at least four. Some have talked to as many as six or seven for the course of the year. I think we'll see at least five or six times when the Fed has raised the overnight Fed funds rate, and I think several times they'll take it up by 50 basis points. So I think by the end of the year, we'll see the overnight Fed funds rate at least to 1.75, maybe 2%. And before it's done, it'll probably even be stronger than that. So the Fed has a long job ahead of itself. It had a long job in front of itself, but it was allowing the monetary aggregates to expand and taking the overnight Fed funds rate to zero. They need to get it back to something that is more amenable to a longer-term relationship with the economy. And so I think it's at least five, maybe six times that the Fed raises the overnight Fed funds rate, 25 basis points most of the time, 50 basis points probably one of the times this year.
All right, we'll continue this conversation on monetary policy, the inflation risk, and geopolitical risk as well. Dennis Gartman is with us for the hour here on Bloomberg Daybreak. He'll be joining us for more just ahead. As we take a look at the markets right now, mixed action as we get set to close out the month of January. Right now, S&P futures are little changed. Dow futures down 75 points. NASDAQ futures moving higher. They're up 71 points. The 10-year Treasury is down 3/32. The yield 1.78% on the 10-year note. Yield on the 2-year right now, 1.19%. We'll get much more on the volatility to end this first trading month of 2022. And the new president, same as the old president in Italy. Top stories of the morning coming up on Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by The Breakers. This winter, a warm welcome awaits you. The Breakers is committed to making your stay even better with exceptional experiences, gracious service, and unparalleled seaside glamour. To learn more, visit TheBreakers.com today.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 99.1. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 4 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. S&P futures are little changed this morning as we close out the volatile trading month of January. Despite Friday's rally, the S&P 500 is down 7% so far this month. The tech-heavy NASDAQ is off by 12%. Oil is up 16% and on track for its best January in three decades.
No, Karen, the pullback in risk assets comes as the Fed turns hawkish. And now there's speculation about whether a rate hike in March could be bigger than initially expected. Let's get the latest live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Renita.
Nathan, the Fed could raise the benchmark rate by 50 basis points if there's a need to be more aggressive on inflation. That's what Atlanta Fed President Raphael Bostic told the Financial Times. And he stuck to his prediction that 3/4-point increases starting in March is the most likely scenario. Meantime, Goldman Sachs predicts the Fed will raise interest rates by 25 basis points five times this year. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Renita, thank you. Interest rates are also in focus in Europe. According to a Bloomberg survey of economists, the Bank of England will raise interest rates to 0.5% on Thursday. That would complete the first back-to-back rate hikes in 18 years.
Politics are also front and center in Europe, Karen. After 6 days of voting in Italy's parliament, Sergio Mattarella has been re-elected president and will remain in office for another term. We get the details from Bloomberg's Francine Lacqua in Rome.
Mario Draghi, the prime minister, was initially seen as a top contender for the job, but lawmakers then feared a return to political turmoil without Draghi as prime minister. In the end, it was Draghi himself who asked Mattarella to remain in office, breaking the week-long stalemate. The outcome could also provide relief to investors, as it reduces the chances of early elections and will let Draghi press ahead with his reform agenda until the next election, due in 2023. In Rome, Francine Lacqua, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Francine, thank you. And we also have a possible deal to tell you about this morning. Bloomberg News has learned that Elliott Investment Management and Vista Equity are nearing an agreement to buy software maker Citrix Systems. The deal would value the company's equity at about $13 billion. The takeover could be announced as soon as today. And again, S&P futures are little changed this morning. Dow futures down 90, NASDAQ futures up 64. The DAX in Germany is up 0.8%. 10-year Treasury down 4/32, yield 1.78%. The yield on the 2-year, 1.20%. And NYMEX crude oil is up 0.9%. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thanks. It's 5:33 on Wall Street. We're 21 degrees in Central Park. We got delays on the Long Island Railroad, Port Jefferson branch. Also, C Street service suspended. Details coming up in traffic. First, Michael Barr with more on what's going on in New York and around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. New York City Mayor Eric Adams says free COVID antiviral pills are going out in the mail to eligible residents. The goal of the new program is to keep sick people home rather than inside crowded stores.
We have the highest vaccination rate in the nation.
Also speaking with Mayor Adams at the news conference in the Bronx, NYC Health Commissioner Dave Chotchky, he says the city already offers free at-home vaccinations.
Taken together, all of these tools help us defang the virus, keeping our loved ones out of the hospital and saving lives.
Dr. Chosky says the pills will be delivered in partnership with Alto Pharmacy. Foreign Relations Committee Chair Bob Menendez says U.S. senators are close to agreeing on a Russia sanction bill that could include penalties even if President Vladimir Putin doesn't send troops into Ukraine. It comes as the U.N. Security Council is scheduled to meet today for the first time on the Russian troop buildup. The Biden administration reiterated that it is ready to hold talks with North Korea without preconditions a day after Kim Jong-un's regime fired an intermediate-range ballistic missile for the first time since 2017. A senior administration official described North Korea's recent series of missile launches as destabilizing. Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine says former President Donald Trump should not have promised to pardon January 6th insurrectionists. Collins also was asked whether she would endorse Trump if he decided to run again in 2024.
Well, certainly it's not likely, given the many other qualified candidates that we have that have expressed interest in running.
Senator Collins spoke on ABC's This Week, which can be heard Sundays on Bloomberg. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Sports Update with John Stanshauer.
Thanks, Nathan. Kind of an unlikely Super Bowl matchup. The Bengals, until this month, had not won a playoff game in 31 years. They had never won one on the road, and they've never won a Super Bowl. The Rams have only won one. That was when they played in St. Louis. Bengals and Rams both came from behind, 1-3. They'll meet in 2 weeks in L.A., so after 54 Super Bowls without a team playing in its home stadium, it'll happen 2 years in a row. In L.A., the Rams trailed the 49ers by 10 in the fourth quarter, rallied the win 20-17. Matthew Stafford's third playoff win after having not won any first 13 years of his career. Big games catching passes for both Cooper Kupp and Odell Beckham. The Bengals trailed in Kansas City 21-3, but the Chiefs, who scored touchdowns on their first three possessions, did not score one in their last eight. Cincinnati went ahead with 21 points in a row. KC forced overtime, but Patrick Mahomes' second interception led to the end.
If McPherson could send him to the Super Bowl.
4 years ago, he was a senior in high school in tiny Fort Payne, Alabama. Now the Bengals' Super Bowl chances rest on his right foot. The kick is up.
Yeah.
Hit.
Yeah.
Good. Coffin nails.
Bam, bam, bam. That is unbelievable.
Evan McPherson field for goal on WLW. Cincinnati won 27-24, just 6 wins over their previous 2 seasons. The odds on them reaching the Super Bowl were 125-1. Rangers got a goal final minute from Keandre Miller. Beat the Seattle Kraken at the Garden 3-2. The Islanders lost to Minnesota 4-3. College hoop wins for Manhattan. Iona, Fordham lost. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan.
Thank you, John. It's 5:37 on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report. Here's Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
Since New York State's ban on most evictions ended this month, the pace of evictions has been slow. Tenant attorneys have delayed cases, and the governor requested more aid for rental assistance. Dow Jones reports New York City landlords entered 231 eviction filings the week after the moratorium expired. A month after the Fair Chance in Housing Act took effect in New Jersey, advocates tell NJ Spotlight people with a criminal record still face discrimination. The Fair Chance in Housing Act bans housing providers from inquiring about criminal histories on housing applications. Connecticut is encouraging consumers to look closer to home for food and milk, as supply chain issues and labor shortages cause empty shelves and higher prices. The Post reports the Department of Agriculture is promoting local farms and farmers markets as good options for residents' food sources. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey.
Thanks, Ed. It's 5:38 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Steve Potusk, and on 1010 Winds in New York, we're talking about how the ability to work from home has some blue-collar workers making the switch to office jobs.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KTRH in Houston. Boeing has begun the planning process for an all-new airplane.
I'm Caroline Hepcorn, Bloomberg DAB, digital radio in London. We're reporting on mounting expectations for a rapid tightening by the Bank of England, the first back-to-back hikes in 17 years.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting cruise ships will visit Muskegon, Michigan again this summer.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. It's 5:39 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Editorial Board. With Democrats unable to advance their comprehensive voting rights bill through the Senate, they should now turn their attention to more pragmatic concerns. A good place to start would be overhauling the Electoral Count Act of 1887. This outdated law opens the door to partisan interference in the electoral count certification process. Lawmakers of both parties have already expressed support for reforming the ECA, and negotiations on the matter are ongoing. Notably, these talks have the approval of Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell. Understandably, Democrats are frustrated that their broader electoral reforms aren't going anywhere. But given the reality of a sharply split Senate, fixing the Electoral Count Act would count as real progress on its own. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Editorial Board. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
Listen for Bloomberg Opinion editorials every weekday at this time. Terminal customers can read more at OPIN Go. S&P futures down 6 points. Dow futures down 121 points. NASDAQ futures still higher by 46 points. The 10-year Treasury down 6/32, the yield 1.79%. NYMEX crude now up 1.1% or 93 cents at $87.75 a barrel. Our conversation with Dennis Gartman, former publisher of the Gartman Letter, continues next. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, sunshine and a high near 30 today. Mostly sunny tomorrow, mid-30s. Will be mostly cloudy and in near 45 degrees by Wednesday. Right now, 21 in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stock index futures are, well, S&P futures anyway, little changed. NASDAQ futures, they're higher, up about 70 points, and Dow futures are down 86. Investors are betting corporate earnings will continue to grow amid aggressive tightening by the Fed. And right now, the 10-year Treasury is down 5/32, yield 1.78%. The yield on the 2-year, 1.20%. NYMEX crude oil is up 1% of 84 cents at $87.66 a barrel. COMEX gold up about 0.3%, up $4.90 at $17.91.50 an ounce. The euro, 1.1173 against the dollar. British pound, 1.3444. The yen's at 115.51. Bitcoin this morning moving lower at $37,250. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, thank you very much. Russia has more than 100,000 troops near its border with Ukraine today. The United Nations Security Council meets to discuss the situation and what could happen next. North Korea confirms it test-fired a mid-range ballistic missile yesterday. U.S. officials are condemning the biggest missile test by North Korea since 2017. It will be the Bengals versus the Rams in the Super Bowl on February 13th. Cincinnati beat the Chiefs 27-24 in overtime to win the AFC. The Rams beat the 49ers 20-17 for the NFC title. In the NHL, the Rangers won, the Islanders and Bruins lost. In tennis, Rafael Nadal has won a men's record 21st Grand Slam singles title in the Australian Open final. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts from more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. It's almost 5:49 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and Dennis Gartman is back with us now, former publisher of the Gartman Letter, now chairman of the University of Akron Endowment Investment Committee. Dennis, as we continue to think about how much tightening to expect from the Fed, how much do you think this Friday's jobs report for the month of January will factor into the central bank's decision-making?
Let us hope that they take the monthly employment numbers with a great grain of salt, because they are the most erratic of all the numbers that come out. The revisions from one to the next are extraordinary. You can never guess what the revision is going to be. The direction has been to be slightly better. But on balance, if you get the non-farm payrolls number within 100,000, I think you've done one hell of a good job. I think the Fed will pay very little attention to this monthly number, and will pay attention to the trend over the course of the last several months. But let us hope that they don't pay too much attention to this week's number. It'll be terribly erratic. And again, the revisions from one month to the next have been extraordinary over the past several years.
Yeah, it's been very difficult, I think, for economists to game out how the labor market is looking, particularly under a pandemic. Why do you think there has been so much difficulty?
Well, it's been because you have two different groups that go into the monthly number, the household report and the corporate report, for lack of a better term. And they tend to be a bit exogenous and erratic, one compared to the other. I tend to look at the ADP number as being a more valid number. It comes out on Wednesdays, and I tend to look at that with a greater degree of certainty than I look at the monthly numbers from the federal government. So it's been 20 years that I've had to learn a hard lesson on that. 40 years ago, it used to be an easy number to forecast. In the course of the last 10 and 20 years, it's become more and more difficult. Why that has been is quite beyond me, but it's amazing to me and almost amusing to me that we pay as much attention to it as we do.
Just a couple minutes left here in our conversation, Dennis, but the price of oil, once again, is surging. We've got Brent above $91 a barrel right now. Geopolitical risk at the forefront here. How much do you expect tensions between Russia and the U.S. when it comes to the situation in Ukraine to affect markets?
Let us hope that cooler heads prevail. Let us hope that the attitude taken by the Ukrainians themselves has been less concerned, it seems, than has been Washington relative to what's going on there. Let us hope that cool heads prevail. This is a nuclear age. This is a very disturbing circumstance. And my guess is that the Russians probably shall not incur into Ukraine. I think the United States has made it so abundantly clear that there will be some sort of serious sanctions that will be put into effect. Let us hope that cooler heads prevail. My guess is they probably shall be, and that this will probably wend its way towards nothingness over the course of the next several weeks and months. Let's hope that I'm right.
Well, with crude prices as high as they are, Dennis, what impact is that going to have on stock prices and the growth trajectory for this economy in our last minute?
We forget how much petroleum is responsible for almost everything we touch. I mean, it's in your deodorant, for goodness sake. It's in clothing that we wear. It's everywhere beyond just our automobiles and our airplanes that drive in the air and drive on the road. So higher prices for petroleum extract a larger inflationary expectation and be construed as being supportive of economic activity. It has to be deleterious. I'm somewhat surprised that Brent has been able to push above $91 to $92 a barrel. I suspect that this the best cure for high prices is high prices. I think it'll increase the amount of drilling that goes on. But thus far, as we've moved from zero prices, 2 years ago we went to negative numbers in crude oil, which is still astonishing event. And here we are at these numbers. The fact that we've not seen an increase in drilling has rather surprised me.
All right, Dennis, as always, thank you for your insights. Dennis Gartman, former publisher of the Gartman Letter, now chair of the University of Akron Endowment Investment Committee. Karen.
Nathan, it is 5:53 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Law Report, brought to you by American Arbitration Association. Business disputes are inevitable. Resolve faster with the American Arbitration Association, the global leader in alternative dispute resolution for over 90 years. More at ADR.org. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
President Biden now has six seats to fill on the Ninth Circuit. Judge Andrew Hurwitz announced plans to step down from his role as an active judge on the largest federal appeals court this summer. Several businesses in the retail, travel, food, and home improvement industries have received notices from the California Attorney General's office. They are accused of operating loyalty programs that violate the state's Consumer Privacy Act. Shopify denies allegations that it has enabled the copyright infringement of textbooks. Publishers filed a complaint in a Virginia federal court.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
Thanks, Jeff. Now another legal story we're watching brings us to a case involving former President Donald Trump. An investigation is ramping up into whether the former president violated Georgia law by trying to pressure state officials to throw out Joe Biden's presidential election victory. The Fulton County District Attorney has gotten permission to impanel a special grand jury in the investigation. For more on the matter, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to former federal prosecutor Robert Mintz, a partner at McCarter & English.
Why did the prosecutor request a special grand jury?
The Fulton County District Attorney made that request because she said that key witnesses in the investigation, including, for example, the Georgia Secretary of State, would not cooperate without being subpoenaed to testify. So the special grand jury was created to give her the power to bring these individuals before the grand jury. Interestingly, the special grand jury gives her the power to have a grand jury whose sole focus is this investigation, and they are able to meet on a more regular basis and will move this investigation along at a much quicker pace.
Of course, the big question is whether Trump's attempts to reverse the outcome in Georgia were criminal. What will the prosecutor be looking at?
The Fulton County District Attorney is going to look at certain key events that occurred on January 2nd, 2021. Specifically, at 3 p.m. on Saturday, there was a phone call, which was recorded, between President Trump and the Secretary of State, in which prosecutors may allege that President Trump tried to push and coerce, this is the Secretary of State, into counting Georgia's presidential votes in a way that favored President Trump. Specifically, President Trump stating to the Secretary of State, "We won very substantially in Georgia." And then the president went on to say, "It's more illegal for you than it is for them because you know what they did and you're not reporting it. That's a criminal offense and you can't let that happen." And then he says what is probably the key words in that telephone call, "I want to find 11,780 votes." That's going to be the key fact in that investigation. And prosecutors will try to prove that what the president was doing was threatening the Secretary of State, that if he did not yield to that request, that he himself could face criminal charges.
Most people have heard the saying that a prosecutor can get a grand jury to indict a ham sandwich. So the question isn't so much whether she can get an indictment, but rather whether she only wants an indictment if she can get a conviction.
While it's relatively easy for prosecutors to get an indictment because of the lower criminal standard probable cause and because the grand jurors only hear the prosecutor's side of the case, but a prosecutor never wants to get an indictment that they don't believe they can ultimately prove in court, and particularly in a case like this that would be enormously high profile with the stakes enormously high, I don't think we're going to see the prosecutor pursue this case unless she believes that she can ultimately get a conviction.
And that's Robert Mintz, a partner at McCarter & English, speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. Catch more of that interview plus analysis of the latest legal news by listening to the Bloomberg Law Show at 10 p.m. Eastern Time or subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast. And attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com. S&P futures, they're lower now, down 4 points. Dow futures down 118. NASDAQ futures higher, up 63. Our top stories straight ahead. This is Bloomberg.